Welcome, everybody, to a very belated edition of the Gwyntelligence Podcast. I am David Marver of Change the Padres, joined, as always, by Padres Jagoff.
Yes, here after, for me, only a week. I did a Gwyntelligence Podcast last week. But yes, with the team formed, it has been quite a while. In fact, the trolls have actually accused you of hiding when the Padres season went south this year.
That is not the case at all, and it definitely has gone south. We will touch on that a little bit here. I'm still behind ownership, at least the decision they made to at least try this season. So, you know, even though it failed, and, you know, I thought they would be better than they are, that's okay. I can live with failure so long as there's effort along with the failure. You know, and maybe it would have been better doing nothing. Probably would have been better doing nothing, but you know, it's better than the off seasons we've seen where the team enters April with Clayton Kershaw and Edinson Fulquez as their one or two pitchers.
Yes. So I see you're falling into the, at least they tried, because that's what really matters, camp.
Well, it's not even, I mean, obviously I prefer to have an owner that just opened his pocketbook and shut his mouth and got out of the way. You know, that is what we want. I couldn't even tell you who the Giants owner is. And that's like the best thing possible for a team.
Wait, you don't like the executive report with Dan Cilio Padre Wednesday, 7:30?
I do not pay attention to Dan Cilio. In fact, I tweeted out a video of me turning the radio to a different station the other day when his show was on. He started talking about Miami Dolphins, and I was like, that is absurd.
He actually brought a guest on to talk about the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, I was like, you're lucky 1360 is on commercial. I'll give you a chance. And it was like, Miami Dolphins. And I was like, what am I doing here? Okay, we have a ton to talk about. I'm just going to name some of the things that have happened since the Padres, or since you and I last spoke, and then if there's anything you want to say about those, you can say them. Otherwise, let's just focus on the trade deadline. The Padres fired Bud Black. The Padres lost a lot of baseball games. The Padres are pretty much eliminated from the playoffs. You know, those are the three main things that have happened, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, that pretty much sums it up. I don't think we need to go through why we suck. I think most of us know at this point. If you don't know, there's plenty of national media literature detailing all of the failures of the Padres. You know, I've written on Twitter a bunch of times, like, everything that's gone wrong with the team is totally consistent with going all in, which is what I've always said I believe they did. And when you go all in, sometimes you don't win and you lose everything. So I kind of think that's where we're at. And I always make fun of the at least we tried, the at least Matt Kemp's trying hard, that kind of talk. But, you know, there is value in trying. I mean, like you said, we've seen them pretty much not try for years now. But I think when you try and you go with the strategy of going for it all in one season and it doesn't work out, sometimes I don't think the best plan is to repeat that plan, or, you know, sometimes you got to totally change course. And I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about it later at the trade deadline, but I don't know if expectations for Preller to have another amazing do everything offseason is realistic right now to fix this team.
And I don't even know if it would fix the team.
Oh, we can talk about that. I don't know if you read my Gwyntelligence blog post a few weeks ago on pretty much where we go from here. Like, the situation's dire, I think. If you want to talk about future payroll obligations, like financial status, even with Fowler, who went in the newspaper a couple weeks ago, last week maybe, throwing out a $120 million figure for payroll, going for next year, there's not much to play with to fill a ton of holes on this team.
Yeah, I mean, right now, right? I would be surprised if at the end of the trade deadline the Padres had all of these pieces in place still. And I know, you know, they're probably going to have to eat Melvin Upton's salary, Matt Kemp's salary, Craig Kimbrell's salary, but, you know, even guys like Andrew Cashner, Tyson Ross, you know, if you move them and they're on the books for next year going to arbitration, you know, that's still some money you save if you bring back a young pitcher.
Well, and I took that into account in my calculation. So, I mean, I calculated going into next season let's say we stand pat, it's about $100 million. It's actually a little bit more than $100 million because I used minimum salary for Alonso and Will Myers and Derek Norris, but they're actually going into arbitration, so it'll be a little higher. So you're sitting at $100 million to bring back this roster and then fill the roster with minor league minimum players. So it's to me, it's absolutely mandatory. And that's before you fill the free agent departures, you know, left field, number four starting pitcher. Who else am I forgetting? Setup man, other setup man. I mean, there's a lot of holes to fill, and there are holes that aren't necessarily cheap to fill.
Of course, but part of me thinks that this is just bad luck this year. Like, almost everyone on the roster is performing below expectations, and guys who have left San Diego are performing above expectations. You know, I think there might be something there systemically that they could figure out before then. You know, it's also just, you know, 80 games in baseball or 100 games in baseball, that's still not a large sample size. I mean, if you took...
Well, who are we talking about here? I mean, some of these guys have a track record of performing.
I am saying that even though the record is bad right now, even though the plus-minus on run differential is bad, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that the team is bad. You know, like, if you took a team that was a 55% win team, which is pretty good in baseball, you know, you're going to compete for a wild card at 55% for sure, and you simulate by coin flip or by a dice roll of a 100-sided die, 55 in the lower, you give them a win, 56 and higher, you give them a loss, you're going to end up with a ton of 162-game samples where that good team, that 55% win team, is winning 75 games. It's a mathematical probability that that's going to happen, you know, a significant part of the time, because that's just the way numbers work. And so I don't think – you know, as bad as they look on the field, you know, the games where they get shut out or any time a ball is hit to any of our defenders, you know, and it's one of those things where I don't think you necessarily have to press reset. And I'm a little skittish on trading everyone and trying to do it all over again, because I still think, you know.
Well, my question is always, so I look at the 2016 roster. I understand that we may clear up some payroll this year, but I'm having difficulty finding a way. Like, we trade Shields, fine. Now we're in the market for a number one starting pitcher. You need to trade Cashner. Now we need a number three pitcher. Like, we can trade these people, and obviously we may get a return of someone major league ready. Although, from what I'm reading, the players other than Tyson Ross aren't going to bring back much via trade. I can't see a scenario where I see this team adding enough to become competitive. So, I mean, then you go to the next step. You look at what we have and you look for areas of improvement. But I'm looking at our players and they're either playing to what we would expect them to do, or I don't see where we're going to add war, basically, like where these wins are coming from out of these current players. I mean, James Shields is pitching about how you would expect James Shields to pitch when you look at his recent years. You know, Will Myers is really the only one you could say, hey, I think he could have a breakout five war season. And then you mitigate that with is he going to be healthy? He hasn't done it before. But I mean, just feasibly, I think he's the one you would look at as a breakout player. But I don't see a lot of other breakout players on this roster.
I could see Jed Jericho having another bounce back, like having a bounce back year. I could see Yonder Alonso.
But a bounce back year for them is a two war season. It's not, I don't see Yonder Alonso breaking out and getting a four or five war season. So, I
could see a 27, 28 year old second baseman with a lot of power putting up a 3.5-4 war season, especially because he didn't play second base, you know, throughout his minor league career. And, you know, maybe those defensive metrics go up too. I could see a breakout there. I could see more of a breakout from Yonder Alonso with, you know, a full, you know, bill of health. Maybe brushing with 400 on base percentage, which is fantastic in modern baseball. I mean, those are, you know, Austin Hedges for a full year. Granted, I don't know what you do with Derek Norris, but maybe there's a market for him somewhere. Not the way he's playing now, but you know, and
that's the thing. We're back to the Burns era where we would, you know, he would do some stuff. We would say that's not enough, but maybe you could imagine, hey, if these guys perform at the top end of the projections, you know, I think we might skate into a wild card or into contention. I think that's where we're at. You know, I think best case, that's where we're at. I just don't see a scenario where we can do enough with $120 million payroll and our obligations to create that competitive team. And I'm open. I want to read a scenario that someone comes up with that says, you know, we do this, we clear this payroll, we look at these players, but I haven't seen it, and I can't brainstorm a feasible scenario that doesn't rely on luck or every player outperforming their history.
Yeah, I'm not saying that the Padres are going to be good. I'm just saying that sometimes good teams or even average teams play bad and make things look worse than they really are. You know, I'm realistic enough now to look at the Dodgers and what they're doing and say, you know, it's unrealistic to expect the Padres to win the division in the next year or two. And so, you know, I think
Then at the point that you say they're not going to win the division in the next year or two, I mean, look at the players we have. Why keep Tyson Ross?
I'm not saying keep Tyson Ross. I'm just saying I don't know if blowing it entirely up is the right course of action. Now,
Who's worth keeping, though? Will Myers? Maybe you could make an argument for Derek Norris, but I think it's a weak argument at this point.
Beyond that, there's not
that much that's under contract three years from now.
It's a complicated question because, first and foremost, you don't sell players that are underperforming what you expect them to do going forward because that's selling at a low point. You know, there's no reason for us, for example, to trade a Jed Jerko or to trade players who you're going to be eating money on who might actually, in some strange scenario, you know, recuperate some of that value. For example, what if Melvin Upton plays the rest of this year and happens to hit 15 home runs and plays respectable outfield defense? I mean, this guy was a 3-5 WAR player like four of the last 7 years. So, you know, I don't think you just blow it all up and trade everything because then by definition you're trading players that are underperforming and you're going to get less value back for that. So, you know, first and foremost, I look at the players that are outperforming, the players that have a market. So you look at, and let's just transition this into our trade deadline talk here. You know, I look at a guy like Tyson Ross who I don't know if his value will ever be higher because his cheap years are soon to be behind him. He's healthy. He's throwing really well. I mean, he just threw 100 consecutive innings without giving up a home run.
Right.
You know, I think you take that and you trade him. And, you know, even if you get back slightly below what you think his value is now, I still think that's a net win just based on what his perceived value is now. And then you can look at someone like Will Venable who, you know, he's cheap and he's playing reasonably okay. And I think you get more back from him for him now than you generally would. And then
I mean, he's a free agent. I mean, anyone that's going into free agency at this point should be dumped unless you're going to give him a qualifying offer. So, I mean, Upton's a different story.
That's a yes. So let's touch on that quickly. So Justin Upton, at the end of the year, he's a free agent. If the Padres hold on to him and don't trade him, they have the opportunity to offer him a 1 year, around $15 million contract. Upton obviously will say no, and the Padres will get a compensation pick when he signs elsewhere, assuming he signs elsewhere, which is a safe assumption. I think when you're looking at trading him, you can't trade him unless you're getting back significantly more than just that compensation pick. I don't see a reason to do so otherwise. Even if it's slightly more than a compensation pick,
the only reason to do it is if let's say Fowler and D are pushing Preller to have a competitive team in 2016. I've already checked out of 2016. Like I'm already considering it a lost season unless something major happens, which is entirely possible. But as of now, I think it's a lost season. That would be the only reason to trade for, let's say, like a AAA, you know, mid-level prospect is because you want to plug them into the team next year. I'd prefer the first-round pick, but again, that's a long-term investment, not a short-term investment.
Yeah, no, I just think short-term, long-term, you know, whatever term it is and wherever the player is at, I think you have to, A, trust your ability to draft, because if you can't draft, you're not going to go anywhere anyways. And then put an appropriate value on that draft pick. And you have to get considerably more back for Upton than that draft pick. Otherwise, I don't think you do it.
Right.
Kennedy, different scenario. I actually don't think he would accept a qualifying offer. I do think he will get significantly more than $15 million in the offseason. Just based on the way contracts work in baseball now, I think he will get somewhere around 30 to 40 million. I mean, he is a serviceable arm. He pitches a lot of innings. I mean, his strikeout ratio is still good. His walk ratio still isn't bad. I think the ERA makes his season look a lot worse than it really is, and I think there will be a market for him. He might be, and you know, I don't think the front office would ever risk giving him a qualifying offer, but I think that would be the right thing to do. And I don't think you're going to get back more than that for him. So if I was in charge, I'd keep him and extend him a qualifying offer. I just don't see him accepting it. And I don't see the team getting more in return. That said, I think the Padres will trade him.
Yeah. I think there's no chance they would get any, I don't think they're going to get any return close to what a first round pick would be. I kind of agree with you. I think he wouldn't accept the qualifying offer, but I don't think the team will gamble on it.
Yeah.
I think he's a 3-year, $30 million player. I mean, you look at some of the pitchers that were signed last season and he's right with them. So
the only concern there is whether or not, you know, I don't, and this is something I guess the team would have a better read on. I don't know what he does personally financially. Like, if he's a very responsible person financially, he might be willing to accept $15 million and then roll the dice and hope for a career year and hit free agency again. You know, even so long as he doesn't blow out his arm, he'd probably get around, you know, $8 to $10 million the next year anyways, as opposed to 3 years, $40 million. But generally, you know, no one's accepted a qualifying offer. I would be surprised if anyone ever does. But I'm with you though. I don't think they'll offer him one. I think he'll stay here, and I think he would have rejected it. And I think you'll see he'll get more money in free agency. So then that brings us to you know, other guys on the roster that I think we'd like to move that have been somewhat rumored, like James Shields, who makes a lot of money. Padres just signed Craig Kimbrel, similar thing. They traded for him. Both have what social media is calling not great contracts. I don't necessarily agree with that personally, but they're both rumored to be moved. Do you see any reason to trade Craig Kimbrel? Let's start with him.
No. I mean, personally, I like watching Craig Kimbrel as a season, you know, as someone that goes to a lot of games. I don't think his contract's bad. He makes like $10, $12 million a year. That's not bad to me. I mean, he's like as a reliever, he's going to end up, you know, 1.5 WAR this year. If some would consider it a down year for him.
But WAR for relievers is just broken, especially in the National League. Like, it's a completely leverageless stat, but it ignores the fact that you actually do get a lot of opportunities to use leverage. And so having the best, and by many means, he is one of the best relief pitchers in the history of baseball. You know, he will actually bring in like a, you know, leveraged statistical way. He'll deliver much more than 1.5 WAR. Also, in the National League, the WAR figure includes pitchers hitting against you. Well, he hasn't faced any pitchers, so right. his WAR numbers are, you know, not adjusted correctly for that. So I just want to throw out there that I think his baseline is something like 3. And so, you know, on a dollars per perceived or per true wins brought to your team basis, he's worth well more than he makes, and he's exciting. And I honestly, you know, it's one of those things. I know he's just a relief pitcher, but anytime the Padres, a team in this sort of smaller-ish market, can get their hands on a premier player at any position, I think you have to do it.
Well, and the team has a history of having bad teams, investing in a higher profile closer, you know, maybe for marketing reasons. Because you can have a bad team and still have a great closer. You know, Heath Bell has kept, there was no reason to keep Heath Bell for a long time. You know, especially when his salary was getting a little higher, but he was a star on a bad team. You know, we need someone to go to the All-Star game. I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't trade him. You know, you get a good enough offer, and sure, I mean, he'll listen. But as we're sitting here today, I don't think he would be number one on my list to trade. And I'm not even sure how big of a return he would get. I mean, there haven't been any blowaway rumors of what would be offered for him.
Well, I read today the Padres were ejected by the Yankees when we requested their top shortstop prospect.
Yes, yeah.
So, you know, that's not a good place to start. But if I were the Padres, I would not be trading Craig Kimbrel unless I was getting something very significant in return.
Yeah.
Because I think he would get more money on the open market than his contract currently is by a long, like by a huge margin.
Well, and being realistic, I think you trade Kimbrel and Preller exercises the option on Benoit, and Benoit will be our closer. It's not that much of a savings to go from Kimbrel to Benoit. I mean, maybe you don't think that, but I think that. I think Benoit's coming back if Kimbrel's not here.
Speaking of Benoit, and let's just throw in Shields here too. Give me your prediction on whether or not you think either of those will be traded. Just give me some percentage odds.
I think Benoit will get traded. I don't think Shields will get traded. I think Shields should get traded, but I don't think anyone is willing to give up anything for him. So I'll put Shields at 10%, and I'm going to put Benoit at 80%, 85%.
That feels right. I think that might be a little high for Benoit. I think just players in general don't get traded as frequently as we think based on the rumors. But I think 10% for Shields is fair, and I'll go significantly high for Benoit, something like 50%. Because you never know.
I kind of think they'll take anything for Benoit. I think it's a pure salary. I mean, there's no reason not to. I mean, we're not competing. He makes a lot of money. That's putting like $3 million into Fowler's pocket if you trade him.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on whether or not the money's fungible. Like, if that $3 million goes back in the team, then I am very in favor of trading him.
Well, history has shown that never happens, so.
Right, right. So if it's just purely to save money for the owners, then I'm against it. You know, I think they
– Well, yeah, for us as fans, I'm against it, but I can totally see the motivation from the team to do it.
Yeah, so I guess that factors into the percentage, but not – my favorability towards it.
I mean, the man's on food stamps. Like, I don't know why you're not being more sympathetic to him.
So do you want to talk about
but Shields? I do think it's a low. I think it's a low percentage. I didn't hear if you thought so. I also disagree with you. I don't think his contract looks that great in the future. But you know, I guess there's a lot of debate on that.
He's been striking out a lot of guys, and you know, I look at three statistics when I look at a picture. Strikeouts, walks, home runs. You know, those are pretty much the three main things I'll look at. You know, if I'm worried about a pitcher in the future, I'll look at if their velocity is decreasing or, you know, are they getting more ground balls or is the ball getting hit as a line drive more often. But by and large, strikeout ratio, walk ratio, home run ratio, those are the three most indicative things of future success for a pitcher. Shields left the American League. He doesn't have to face a DH, comes to the American League, and immediately his strikeout per walk ratio or his strikeout ratio skyrockets. And so, you know, I think he's pitched, with the exception of a few home runs that have left the park, and I'm torn on whether or not that's just a fluke of 100 games or if that's an actual trend that's going to continue. But the strikeouts are going to continue. I don't, you know, that's something that I think can carry over and is a good sign for his long-term outlook. I don't think he'll end up being worth, you know, 3 years from now. Obviously, he'll be worth less than he is now, and he'll be getting paid more, and that's not great. But I think in the immediate future, especially this year and next year, I think he'll easily earn his contract. I'm not concerned about that. And if the team wants to try to compete next year, then I don't think they should trade Shields.
Well, A, that goes back to, you know, from where I'm coming from, of we're not going to compete next year. And then B, I think you can do – I think when you're talking about clearing payroll for 2016 to even give a chance to compete, Shields is the main person to get rid of. I think you can equal the value you get from Shields on the free agent market with money left over to put towards other things. I'm not saying Shields is bad. I think he's a good pitcher. I like watching him. He seems like a really cool dude. But, I mean, he's a 2-3 war pitcher these days, and he's not getting younger. And pitcher's a position where they kind of fall off the edge of a cliff really quick. So, you know, for risk mitigation and for pure performance, I think if we can find someone to take him and take on the salary, you do that and you reinvest the money this offseason. Like, you take a guy like Mike Leake. I don't think Mike Leake's a $20 million a year pitcher on the free agent market, but he produces pretty close to equal, if not better, than James Shields does. I mean, I would take that trade, you know. And when you're tight on money and you have so many spots to fill on the roster, I think you need to look for solutions. And trading Cashner, that helps, but a lot of the money you save on Cashner is going to go towards the replacement for Cashner.
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on what you get back for Cashner. So,
well, I mean, do you think you're getting a major league ready number three starter for Cashner? Because it doesn't look like it from what I've been reading.
I think you could. I think you can, yeah. I mean, I would be surprised if he was dealt for something less than that. Maybe not fully major league ready. You know, maybe you're looking at someone who's high A ball with a little bit more upside than a number three starter, but
I kind of think we value Cashner a lot more than the baseball community at large. You know, and a lot of that's because he's been the face of the Padres in some respects for the last year.
I don't necessarily disagree with that. I think he's overrated by Padres fans, but he's still a fairly average to above average starting pitcher who's cheap or cheap-ish and controllable. And, you know, those things don't grow on trees. It always comes down to alternatives. You know, for a team that wants to compete for the next few years, you know, what are their options? They either have to trade for a guy like Cashner, or they have to completely overpay a player like Cashner on the free agent market. And so then you just compare the difference in that value, and it's, you know, tens of millions of dollars. Right. So inherently, even though Cashner's not a great player, and I'm one of the people, you know, I would say that I've been a Cashner skeptic for a long time. You know, he's an average guy, but average guys are worth something in baseball because the other way to get an average guy is by paying him a lot of money, and you don't want to pay average guys a lot of money. And so I just see that there is this, and maybe it's not at the trade deadline, maybe it's in the offseason. You know, I still think you can get a decent return for Cashner in terms of prospects or prospect. Now, I think Tyson Ross is worth a lot more, and I would be surprised if the Chargers, what the fuck am I talking about?
Gross.
Man, I would be surprised if the Padres traded Tyson Ross for anything close to what we would get back in return for Andrew Cashner. I think those guys are in different leagues in terms of baseball value, even though they are thought of as fairly similar assets by most of the Padres community.
Real quick on James Shields, I heard he gave up a home run early yesterday. It was his 21st home run he's given up. And Scanlon comes on and says, hey, you know, he's given up 21 home runs, but he's shown a real skill at limiting the damage of those home runs because 17 of those 21 have been solo home runs. Do you think that's a tool of Shields or is that dumb luck? You know, in the respect of, is he pitching differently when there's no one on base than he does when there's men on base?
I would have to, you know, well, there's one way of looking at that and getting the answer to that, and that is by actually going and looking at his pitch effect statistics. But, you know, by and large, a sample of 21, when what was it, 17 of them have been empty bases and four were with runners on base?
Yep.
Okay, I mean, what is the normal distribution there? I mean, most home runs probably occur with no one on base just by nature of how hard it is to get on base and
right.
Everything else that goes along with that. What would be a normal distribution? 14 of them? I mean, if you're talking about a difference in three home runs, that's statistical garbage. That's not like a provable thing. But unless or until, I guess, I go and look at those statistics, if I ever do that, on pitch location and maybe, you know, pitch selection on those when there's no one on versus when there are guys on, you know, it's hard for me to say if there's actually a difference in approach. It could be both. It could be there's a difference in an approach and he's lucky. So I don't buy that. My hope for Shields is that some balls have just gotten hit harder for whatever reason. Not really a real reason, but just that's just how, you know, 100 innings works. You have good outings and you have bad outings at a much higher variance than you do over 1,000 innings. And so my hope for him is that if he's not traded, and, you know, part of me hopes he's not traded because that's a better sign, in my opinion, for the health of ownership's wallet if they don't trade him.
Yeah. And
I don't have the confidence that they'll replace him on the free agent market. I just don't. A lot of things came together to get Shields in San Diego that, you know, aren't going to be a frequent occurrence. So, you know, my hope for Shields is that it's just been a fluke in terms of the number that have left the ballpark. And that when that comes down to earth, if it does, that those strikeout and walk statistics, which are much more buoyant and much more, you know, likely to stay where they're at, will still be there. And he'll be back to Kansas City James Shields for, and, you know, at least, if not the rest of this year, you know, all of next year. And that's my hope for him. I don't buy that statistic from Scanlon, though.
I guess we can move on to, you know, the big position of need, obviously, is shortstop. There's been a lot of talk on Starlin Castro, which doesn't excite me. I don't know which shortstop options really excite me. I mean, who are you excited that we may be able to get at this point?
So let me just tie in some listener questions here. I went out and tweeted, asked for some questions. We actually got a lot about shortstop. So the first one comes from Richard Way from Bolts from the Blue. Is Wilmer Flores a potential answer at shortstop? And then Will DeFelice on Twitter asked, which potential shortstop targets do you love and which ones do you hate? So let's just get both of those questions out of the way here. The one I hate the most would be Jose Reyes. So let's just
make sure. I don't hate it.
You don't. He is the most injury prone, one of the most injury prone players in baseball, and he makes a decent amount of money. I mean, if you got him completely free on top of what ownership otherwise would be doing, that's okay to me. But if that's actually part of the budget, if you have to actually give up value to get Jose Reyes, like, please do not do that.
Yeah, I don't think giving up value, but I love the idea of a Shields for Reyes trade straight up. I would do that in a second. I don't know why Colorado would do it, but I would do it.
Well, Colorado might do it because they have a hard time signing pitchers in free agency.
Yeah.
I mean, the times they've done it, they've grossly overpaid. So if they get the ability to get James Shields for 3 years at the cost of, you know, essentially a what I want to consider a salary dump in that Tulowitzki deal, you know, I think they would do it. I would definitely not do that if I were the Padres. I just don't.
I would do that in a second. Jose Reyes is still a good player.
Yeah, but
he's injury prone. Yes.
Yeah, but
80%. But he was also playing in Toronto. He was playing in Toronto on turf.
Yeah, I mean, before that, he was playing in New York, and he was consistently injured too.
Oh, you mean in the middle of him being a 6 WAR, 4 WAR player? I mean, injured but still producing. I mean, he had 4 straight seasons of more than 700 at bats.
Yeah, I mean, that ended when
2012, he had 700 at bats. Last year, he had 655. You know, you're talking about a guy who last year was a 3.4 WAR shortstop. Even this year, injured, you know, 311 at bats, he still produced 1.1. You know, you're talking about shortstop, and we're talking about, you know, I hear names like, you know, Segura, Andrus, Starlin Castro. These are guys that are close to zero WAR that make a lot of money. Wilmer Flores is actually one. I like the idea of Wilmer Flores. He's not going to blow anyone away. He's a 1.5 WAR, mostly defense shortstop, but that's better than what we have, and he's cheap. I would be all over Wilmer Flores actually before I even thought about going after Starlin Castro. But yeah, well, as long as you're talking, you know, more expensive shortstops, which Castro, Andrus are, I'd take Jose Reyes in a second over them. Even his down years, yeah. 2013, 2.2 WAR at shortstop. I mean, 419 at bats. I can deal with that, you know? If you're talking about 2016 specifically, Amarista is under contract anyways. They're not going to cut him. I mean, he's coming back next year. So, I mean, at very worst, you have, you know, I guess a terrible backup shortstop, but who has starting experience if we have to. Barmas can be brought back on an option if we need him. So I don't hate it. Assuming we can trade salary for salary, I like the idea of Reyes. And then using the money we have to go after another free agent pitcher. I think the team ends up net better from that.
Yeah. I mean, I just see there being very, very likely chance that he misses a significant amount of time playing for the Padres.
That's the position we're in. You know, if we're not going to spend a ton of money, you know, our cornerstone core player right now is Will Myers, who has had two lost seasons in a row due to injury. And he's going to come back next year, and we're counting on him to be our key star player at this point. You know, we're in the position where we need to hope and pray that players stay healthy. I still think we're in a position where we need to financially take risks on injury risks and hope that they do okay. You know, whether that's starting pitchers or whether that's a shortstop, I kind of think that's the cards we've been dealt as Padres fans. And, I mean, and as far as those cards go, Jose Reyes is not that bad of a card to take a bet on.
Okay, so I think, you know, there's a sliding scale here. There's, you know, I think if the Padres got Starlin Castro back, for example, that they wouldn't just accept that salary. Like, I think the Padres would be getting money thrown at them from the Cubs in any trade involving Starlin. Or we would be sending salary back towards them that would make it somewhat palatable. But this goes back to what I was saying earlier about the players I would trade if I were the Padres. You know, you trade the guys that are at high value. Likewise, you buy the players that are at low value. And one thing to remember about Starlin Castro, he's 25. He just turned 25. Like, during the season, he turned 25. And he's been around for years and years. He already has, like, 10 WAR banked as a player. And he's signed and he's controllable for, like, until 2020. And so while I think, you know, yeah, if you took him at his full, whatever, $60 million extension he signed, was that last year or a couple years ago, you know, that would obviously not be great. But I still think that's better than getting back a really expensive guy who we have pretty solid certainty is going to be hurt. You know, I think it really is as simple as buying low and selling high. And I think when you look at someone like, for example, Wilmer Flores, I don't necessarily know if he's buy, you know, if he's high or low. And I think he's probably low upside. You know, a glove first guy, light hitting, you know, maybe he'll develop into a decent on-base percentage, completely empty, no slugging shortstop that plays above average defense. And, you know, that is a step up for the Padres for sure. But I don't think it's a championship winning shortstop. Someone like Starlin Castro, who's just about to be entering his prime, unless he's already, you know, left it at age 25, which is rare, who's signed for a reasonable length of time, and you might be getting money back in that deal, I think I'd jump all over that. I would be pretty excited with him as our shortstop. The other guy, you didn't mention him, but there were names, he was being rumored today as another Cubs shortstop, Javier Baez, top prospect. He's been hurt most of this year, but he came back and hit a home run yesterday. You know, where are you on that?
I don't know that much about him. He's got a ton of power.
Last year, he was negative 0.9 WAR in Major League Baseball in 52 games. He struck out 41% of the time. In AAA last year, 23 home runs and just 400-something plate appearances, but he struck out 30% of the time. He's loved by scouts for his power, but he's basically you know, stereotypical Padre of the past few years with a little bit of power.
He's Will Middlebrooks at shortstop.
Yeah. He's also 22.
I mean, I would
keep in mind all the Padres fans wanted to draft him when in that 2011 draft. We were all hoping to get Javier Baez.
I mean, if we're betting on someone, I'd rather bet on him than Castro. I guess I'm not a believer in Castro. He, you know, there's plenty of reports of attitude issues with him, off the field stuff. And honestly, him being injured would actually be a benefit considering he's at negative 0.8 WAR also for the season. I don't want to bet on Castro. I don't think he's a good bet. I'd bet on Reyes staying healthy before I bet on Castro coming back. Baez, you know, Castro, I can look and see he's got a track record of 6 years. You can kind of see the peaks and the valleys with his performance. Baez, you know, he's 22. So I'd bet on him well before I bet on Castro. And I was encouraged seeing some reports today that the Padres aren't all that enamored with Starlin Castro.
Okay. I mean, I guess fundamentally, I think you and I just see this a little bit different. So I would put Reyes at the bottom of the list just because I just see, first of all, his best days have to be behind him pretty much, right?
Yes.
He's an injury-prone player, and he's not cheap. And granted, if the Rockies were going to cover, you know, a large portion of his salary, okay. And if we don't have to give anything up for him, really, or if we only had to give up, you know, say, like, Despaigne or someone that, you know, we think of as being very ancillary to the team's success going forward, sure, I'd like to watch Jose Reyes in a Padres uniform under those conditions. But if we're talking, you know, trade target here, the trade deadline, you know, I am much more interested in buying low on someone who's 25, signed for a decent amount of time, that you could probably acquire pretty cheap, and that would be Starlin Castro.
Oh, I'm with you. I really think other than a Shields for Reyes trade, I can't think of a trade I would be happy with for him, unless they're just giving him away.
And one more thing to note here, Jose Rondon, who the Padres got back at the trade deadline last year, he's been doing horribly in Double A.
So, he's hurt also. He's out for the season.
Yes, he was also hitting something like 190. So, we can't really look forward to him at shortstop like we might be able to look forward to Travis Jankowski at center field. Okay, so I guess let's just rank it officially in terms of these shortstop targets. You got Baez, Castro, Reyes, Wilmer Flores. Who else? There were a couple others.
I mean, do we throw in Andrus or do we throw in Segura or no?
Yeah, why not? And also you can throw in Luis Sardinas, right? He's still
– Ugh, he's dreadful.
Yeah. I would put him on.
Yeah. Do we throw in the current options, a Barmas option, exercising Barmas's option or no?
I really hope that's not an actual real thing.
I go Baez, Reyes, and Flores. Maybe Flores above Reyes. And then everyone else I have grouped in at the bottom. Let's say in 100th place.
Okay. I gotta go. As much as I hate looking at his peripherals and think he's just going to be a complete bust trying to hit major league pitching, I think I got to go Javier Baez first, then Starlin Castro, I guess Wilmer Flores. Oh man. I really don't like anyone past that. And I'm pretty indifferent on Wilmer Flores actually. I would hope that any deal with the Mets would include something more significant than that. Oh man, last place is what we're currently doing. I would rather pay Jose Reyes his entire contract than have Amarista and Barmas next year.
Let's say a hypothetical. I mean, let's say they want Upton. I mean, the trade fell apart tonight. Let's say they want Upton. Would you do Flores in a very low-level prospect for Upton at this point?
No.
I mean, you know you're getting, what is it, 4 controllable years of Flores at this point? A 1 to 1.5 war shortstop, a sure thing.
I would not do that. I think, no, but I still, like, I'm in terms of championship value, like, I don't see Wilmer Flores having championship value. And a first-round pick has certain championship value if you use it on a player who has, you know, a potential of being a significant part of your team in the future, however slim it is with draft picks. I would much rather have a draft pick than Wilmer Flores.
I guess I'd think about it. I'd have to think about it. I wouldn't – I'm not saying no to it.
I mean, I think it'd be different if Flores was like 21.
Of it depends. I mean, we're not privy to a lot of information, you know, what other shortstops are considering, what the offers are on the table. But you know, I look at the free agent class and I look at people that are being talked about in rumors, and those options are not helpful, I think, right now for cost reasons or for performance reasons. At the very least, Wilmer Flores is a cheap, adequate, above league average option.
I mean, assuming the Padres aren't going to offer Kennedy a qualifying offer, Flores is the type of guy I would take back for, like, Benoit and Kennedy, along with a low-level prospect. Like, Benoit, Kennedy.
Oh, well, yeah, I would do that in a second.
Yeah.
I think I'd consider Cashner for Flores straight up, actually.
I would not.
You know, I would trade 1 year of Andrew Kashner for 4 years of Flores.
Yeah, I just think you can do better in a trade for Kashner. I really do.
Maybe, but I don't know. Maybe that's true. It's possible.
I guess
his value is decreasing every you know.
I guess I just go
every
look
day.
I just go look at Wilmer Flores' track record, and with the exception of one half season in Double A and a flash in the pan in Triple A, you know, well,
he's not a breakout guy. He's not going to have a Starlin Castro, you know, blip 3.5 WAR season, but he's a steady, good defense, 1 to 1.5, maybe 2 if he can get on base type player, and I think that's valuable for a shortstop.
Is he good defense?
You know,
he's
above average defensively, according to Fangraphs, he is.
Well, Fangraphs' definition of WAR gives pretty much any shortstop a positive defensive rating.
Well, not Starlin Castro.
Right, but I'm just saying it's adjusted positionally. So it's like a zero isn't like an average at shortstop. Like an average at shortstop would be like 6 or 7 or something.
Right.
It's a really dumb scale they use, and it makes it really tough for these sort of conversations. But my point is more like, you know, he's a league average shortstop. He's not an above average defending shortstop, really. But look, even a league average shortstop is a huge step up for us. And I don't want to entirely dismiss.
Especially if they're cheap. I mean, you look at some of the contracts that are out there, you know, look at Elvis Andrus, look at, Castro. I mean, they make a lot of money. And they get signed quickly to extensions, high dollar extensions. I think there's value in a cost controlled, low, you know, lowly paid shortstop that's you know, above league average.
I think it's one of those things where if you traded for him, you would probably want to extend him immediately just in case he had a breakout.
Yeah, I think so also. I just think, you know, we talk about Kashner. I think people overestimate his value sometimes. You know, he's going into his walk year. He's not a long-term controllable player.
Yeah, and he's not going to stay in San Diego after that.
Right.
I mean, I think it's pretty clear the Padres have tried to make him look like the face of the franchise. I have actually been personally told by people inside the Padres front office that they engaged Cashner's team to have a contract discussion, but the agent pretty much didn't want that to go anywhere. So, you know, at this point, I'm looking at Kashner as, you know, solely a long-term rental for the Padres, not a long-term player.
Right. And, you know, my premise of 2016 being a lost season means to me Kashner holds little value to this team for next year.
Yep.
So, I mean, I'm ready to cash in that chip.
Okay, so this is Richard Wade's second question. Do you think Preller can move Benoit, Kelly, Kennedy, and Upton by Friday? And we've touched on 3 of the 4 of those. We didn't really talk about Sean Kelly much, but
I think middle relievers, setup men, seem to be pretty tradable. So I'll say yes. Upton's tradable. I just don't think there's value in trading him. We could be surprised, you know, but as of now, it doesn't look like there's value in trading him.
Yeah, I guess, you know, after the offseason, I think it's entirely possible Preller trades 4 players in a couple days. Like, I think he's proven his ability to flip players quickly. Whether or not he will or if that's wise, you know, that's a different conversation.
Well, those players aren't getting qualifying offers. I mean, you take anything for them, really.
Yeah.
Especially when you take into account, you know, again, I think there's not for us fans, but for ownership and management, you know, if you can save a few, you know, a few literally millions of dollars by trading them now in a season that's lost already, I don't see why you wouldn't do that. Kelly makes good money. Benoit makes good money. Kennedy makes good money. And you're talking about significant savings for the ownership. You take a low A player for those guys.
But, I guess I don't consider Benoit an expiring. Like, I still think at $8 million that's, like, a reasonable amount of money to pay him. I know that he's having an off year in terms of WAR, but, you know, he hasn't completely dropped off a cliff in terms of strikeout ratio and you know, the home runs per fly ball is up, but he's only thrown 43 innings, so that's probably suppressing.
No, I agree with you. I think his option's a good deal. if we had more money to play with. But when you talk about having, you know, as we sit now, $20 million to play with for the offseason, if you give 8 or 9 or whatever it is to Benoit, you know,
but you don't have to do that though, right? I mean, you can just give him the option and then trade him.
You could do that, yeah.
There's no reason for them really. Like, if there's value in Benoit now, like, it's not going to change all that much in the offseason. Like, it may be a little bit because he's a little bit older and the team that's getting him isn't in contention right now, but they also would get a full season of him, you know.
Right.
So, you know, and he's earning $8 million this year. So, like, prorated, it's the same per game he's on the roster. So, like, I just don't see the huge need to trade Benoit now. Also, it decreases your flexibility with Kimbrel, if you are actually serious about potentially trading him. You know, having Benoit to maybe close games another year isn't the worst fallback option. I just think that he might actually retain some value in the offseason. But the next logical question is, what do you expect to happen? I mean, at this point, I'm torn. Like, I see the Padres pretty much every 10 minutes on Twitter being included in some different trade conversation with another team. It's always a new team when I look at it. Jeff Passan actually just tweeted a list of players that were available, and it was something like David Price, Cespedes, Carlos Gomez, and any Padre. You know, that's where we are right now. What do you expect to actually happen, though?
I still think the expiring contracts are gone. I think you're going to see Kennedy, Benoit, Kelly, and I don't know, 50-50 on opt-in being traded. I don't know. I put a lot of stock in the possibilities of a Ross or Cashner trade. It seems like a lot of talk. I don't know. I think the expiring contracts are gone for sure.
I think we see eye to eye on what we think is going to happen. I think I'm pretty much the same. I think it's about 50-50 with Upton at this point because of that compensation. I think a lot of the other expirings are probably out the door, and it's hard for them to move Ross or Cashner unless you're getting back something significant, or at least in Ross's case. And, you know, those are things that don't have to happen at this deadline. You know, in terms of what I want to see happen, which is my next question for you, because you have a different outlook on 2016 than I do. I mean, I'm not bullish on 2016. I just don't think it's a totally lost cause. That said, you know, I'm hoping they move Ross. I'm hoping they get back some decent prospects for him, preferably bats. And I'm hoping that they can find someone to give us something decent for Justin Upton that's considerably more than just a compensation pick. I hope the Padres bring back Ian Kennedy and offer him a qualifying offer and he declines, because I think that's what will happen and that's what's best for the franchise. You know, I hope they hold on to Kimbrel, and, you know, that Ron Fowler's speaking truthfully when he says payroll will go to $120 million next year. Like, if that happens, I will get season tickets again. And it doesn't matter if Melvin Upton's 20 of that million dollars or whatever it is, $15 million. But I see it playing out much differently than that.
For me, I think if they're not going to just tear down the team and rebuild from scratch, which they're not going to, I think clearing payroll is a priority if there's any hope for 2016. I think if you go into the 2016 with these players, especially the high-dollar players, the season's sunk. I don't think you can fill the openings adequately for $20 million. In my dream scenario, Shields is able to be traded. My realistic scenario, I think you trade Ross because he has the most value. I think you trade the expiring contracts. And honestly, I would trade Ross and Cashner if there were takers for Cashner. I think a guy going into a walk year who's an injury risk, I think you mitigate that risk and you sell while you can for him. And in turn, that opens up, you know, let's say you trade Ross and Cashner, that opens up about $20 million more in payroll. you know, you look at 2016 and the hope is someone like Colin Ray could step in and fill. I think it's absolutely critical that we find someone in the minor leagues that can fill one of the rotation spots for major league minimum. And then you go into the free agent market and try to fill the other slot with an above average pitcher with some of that money.
In a totally perfect world, total fantasy world, I think it would be awesome if they traded everything. Like, I know I've been saying that it would, you know, I don't think necessarily need to tear it down, but like it would be really, and this is all based on them keeping payroll at $120 million next year. So the reason why I, you know, was saying don't necessarily turn it down, the main reason was that I don't think they'll build it back up. Like I'm seasoned enough as a Padres pessimist to believe that, you know, that's not what's going to happen. And they'll come up with some reason why it couldn't happen. The market was crazy, blah, blah, blah. But if they were able to get something significant back for Cashner, Ross, Kennedy, Shields, or, you know, just dumping the salary and Kimbrel and, you know, everyone, and do a real solid rebuild here and just sink the second half of the season and get a really high draft pick, or at least a safe one so you can sign free agents again and not lose it. And that would be preferable to doing nothing.
Yeah. I mean, I've advocated for going, you know, full Luhnow on the team and just tearing it down. But I think it would be, I thought that last year, I thought that's what needed to be done. But let's be realistic. D and Fowler aren't going to do that.
No, they're not. I don't know. You know, I think the more
they're so hating of that of the word fire sale or the impression of a fire sale.
But here's the thing, like, all right, so, and this is going to be the topic of an article I probably will write soon. You know, I feel like Jeff Morad treated this team like a piggy bank. And the more I get, you know, the more I read Fowler, the more I hear him, and the, you know, the more that he's our owner, I just feel that he thinks the Padres are a toy. And I prefer that to piggy bank for sure. But it also means that he might actually, you know, be completely truthful when he says he wants the payroll to be $120 million next year.
And I don't doubt it. I'm not doubting him. I think we will be $120 million.
No, so I guess what I'm saying is that even if they were to go out and trade everyone, which is something that doesn't seem likely to happen, I still think they'd get it back to $120
million. But I agree with you. I think that if you clear out this team and you do a quote-unquote fire sale, I actually think that they will fill the roster with free agents, trades, whatever. I think they'll give Preller the money. I don't think we're looking at having a $40 million payroll next year if they do that. So, I mean, in that respect, it would be really exciting to tear it down and then spend all that money. But let's be realistic here. You know, they're not doing that.
Okay, well, let's try to wrap this up a little bit because I'm sure we'll probably have to do an emergency podcast at the deadline or afterwards.
Yeah, we do have one remaining topic.
We do.
It can be fairly brief.
Yes, this is the I don't even know how to properly introduce it. I'm just going to call it the god-awful uniform change. I honestly can't believe they're not going to brown. I'm really going to the full UC system, blue and, you know, yellow. It's not even like the old Padres mustard. It's like this brand new goldish yellow color.
You mean sunshine yellow.
Yeah, and there's some weird gradient going on in the D and SD. Like, I am honestly shocked that is what they chose, and I cannot – it's not even that I can't believe they would do that. Like, I'm shocked that they're dumb enough not to just go to brown when literally almost everyone wants that. Like, not just Padres fans, not just Padres Twitter, but, like, the most of baseball fans in general that aren't even Padres fans. They like the brown. And it's not so much that they even – won't do that. It's just that this is incredibly awful on top of it. Like, I would have preferred something completely, completely ridiculous, like teal and pink. Like, that would have been, Well, I guess that's been done by the Diamondbacks, but you know, some horrible combination that's never been done before. I would prefer that over UC system with some gradient light blue garbage. It's so frustrating.
Yeah, and I guess I was most surprised by the defense of the colors that I saw from people that I wouldn't have expected that from. I think some people see adding yellow and then possibly, and I do actually think it's realistic that this is what they'll do, it have some kind of brown alternate jersey. But honestly, I think that's a bone that's being thrown to us rather than a real win. And I think Padres management thinks that having an alternate jersey, or, you know, like this year, they were proud of it. They issued press releases and it got picked up by national sources, national media, you know, doing way back Wednesday with throwback brown uniforms. I don't think that's a significant change. I think it's lip service being paid to the fan base. I fully expect them to have those brown alternates, and I think that that's a slap in the face of the people who want to have a unique color to rally around. And that's always been the issue, is having a unique color that no one else has. And blue and yellow, you know, let's just talk about our natural rivals, the Mariners, who historically have been blue and yellow. You know, the Brewers are blue and yellow. The Rays are blue and yellow. It's not an uncommon color scheme in sports.
Yeah, I don't envision myself buying any new blue and yellow gear.
No. Yeah, I was shocked. I love RJ's Fro, and it wasn't Rick who wrote it. It was Bo, who I have actually never read before, but wrote a spirited defense of the yellow. And I think that that sets back the entire movement. And even Bring Back the Brown on Twitter, you know, is somewhat defending it, just adding yellow. And I think that that hurts the cause. Because that's exactly what ownership wants, is tacit acknowledgement and acceptance of the color scheme they chose, and then eating up the bones that they throw us, you know, once a week brown.
So the article you're talking about, are you sure that wasn't – because I read one on Padres Public. I thought it was by RJ's Fro, Bo. I thought he was being facetious, like sarcastic.
I don't think he was.
Really?
I don't know Bo. So I don't know his personality, I read it as literal.
I thought it was really good dry humor. Like, that's the way I read that. And if it's not, then, man, he got me good. But that's how I read that article. Like, that – oh, I'll have to go back and read it.
I'll have to reread it again also. And I'll actually ask Rick what he thinks. But, I think it's awful. And the entire presentation, the big announcement that they had to do, I thought was classic Partello D. Just they feel the need to turn everything into this big event that you can't possibly live up to. Those other than announcing brown uniforms, there's nothing they could have done that would live up to the big event. Like it was going to let down people, and it did. And sometimes I just don't understand, like, their strategy as marketers and as businessmen sometimes.
It's basically worse than that time the 1090 had that huge buildup to just telling us that they were going to keep the Padres on that radio station for a while.
Oh, you mean their major announcement? Which they had another major announcement. They hyped it for, like, a day beforehand, but yeah, I think Partello loves having these big events like that. It's like his thing as a event planner and mobile DJ. Like it's getting to his roots.
Yeah, this is just another example to me of how Ron Fowler treats the Padres as if it's a toy. Like it's too obvious to switch to brown, and it seems too lucrative and profitable, and it's something that all the fans would enjoy, even though it's ultimately meaningless on the field, except for in terms of revenue. I just think that Ron Fowler probably just doesn't like the color brown, and this is his toy, and he doesn't want it to be brown. That's the only thing I can put my finger on right now for that. And it's unfortunate, because if they were serious about winning the World Series and all those sort of things, then they would be trying to get every single penny out of their fan base, and getting every penny out of their fan base would mean going brown, because I would buy brown stuff. I certainly would. I would buy a lot of brown stuff. I'm not going to buy any like blue and yellow stuff. I already have all that. I already have Chargers jerseys. I have UC Santa Barbara stuff. I don't need any more brown and why? Because it says SD? Like, I don't get it.
Yeah, and to some degree, I kind of agree. I heard the I don't know if you've listened to them, the Kept Faith podcast actually talked about it a few weeks ago about how, you know, some sports cities, Pittsburgh in this case, match the colors of all of their professional teams. And I do kind of like that idea, but the Chargers are leaving. Like, this is – it doesn't make any sense to do that here.
And the Chargers should just go brown.
Yeah, make them go brown. That's a good point. Why are we going blue and yellow? Like, why don't they go brown and yellow?
Yeah, I bet you if the Chargers went brown and yellow, they'd have a higher chance of getting a stadium.
Yeah, they're the jerks. You're right.
We should write a letter to Faulkner. Let him know. Okay. Well,
my basic message is: I think our listeners and the fan base need to not tacitly accept the, you know, the blue and yellow, because in doing so, it only empowers ownership to continue with never giving us brown. I mean, we can be slightly happy on, you know, those alternate brown or way back Wednesdays, but just know that it's a tool to pacify us, not something to make us happy. It's to pacify the masses.
Yep. Okay, well, I have to duck out here, but let's do an emergency podcast, assuming there's some trades happening at the deadline. And I will also be contributing some good pieces coming up here soon. I've just been too busy. So,
yes.
But I'm really glad. And by the way, I have also re-upped our Quintelligence.com server.
Oh, phew.
We're good.
Okay. I assume you listened to the Mets preview podcast that I did, yeah?
I did. In the shower with my new Bluetooth shower waterproof Bluetooth speaker.
Yeah, how are the production values? Did you notice I added drops to the podcast?
We should do more South Park drops on here. Like, that's
right. I'll get the soundboard ready.
As soon as I heard Cartman, I was like, uh-huh, that should be happening every time.
Yeah. Well, we can tease that for future episodes. New drops.
Oh, you know what would be great? I wonder if we could find all of the 1090 stuff that, like, Partello and Mike D and Ron Fowler has done, and then just make a soundboard on them.
I mean, that could be pretty easy. It's not that hard to recreate a Mike D interview. We're really trying to win. You know, when we're making trades, we are looking to obtain equal value for what we are trading. Like, he just states the dictionary definition slowly. You know, we're trying to score more runs than our opposition to get wins on the field. Like, he's just the worst. He's the worst.
But, I mean, he spices it up a little bit more. I feel like every fifth word he uses a thesaurus or something. You know, it's like, what is the longest word that is a synonym for this? And he'll throw that in there just to lengthen the amount of time he's talking and saying nothing.
Yeah, just so you know, he went to a minor liberal arts college in Pennsylvania. Like, he's just trying to prove his worth to us.
Okay, well, until next time, which will be soon, probably. Go Padres.
Go Padres.